Hey, we're going to take a little break here and talk about Interstate batteries. Now, if you're like me, enjoying the great outdoors, you need gear that is as reliable as it gets. That's why I power my adventures with Interstate batteries. I use Interstate batteries in my boats. I use Interstate batteries in my camper. Great for your truck, too. From Alaska to Montana, they're outrageously dependable. Battery is essential. With over 150,000 dealer locations, finding one is easy. For all your vehicles, land or sea, choose Interstate. Head to interstatebatteries.com and find your power today.
For all you elk hunters out there, chasing turkeys is basically the same thing. I know the reaction you just gave me, but don't knock it till you try it, and don't try it without OnX. The Hunt app will not only help you find new areas on public ground, but I use it to find out landowner info to get permission on private ground that I see birds on as well. OnX Hunt has a special offer for you. Use code CAL to receive 20% off your membership at onxmaps.com/hunt and find more birds this spring.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
From Meat Eaters World News Headquarters in Bozeman, Montana, this is Cal's Week in Review with Ryan Cal Callahan. Now, here's Cal.
The Alaska Department of Transportation recently purchased a robotic dog they hope to use to scare wildlife away from airport runways. They've named the dog Aurora, and they plan to dress it up like a coyote or a fox so it can chase waterfowl at the Fairbanks International Airport. They'll also be looking to see how moose and bears respond to the headless metal robot that looks to be about the size of a golden retriever. Wildlife can be a real danger to airplanes, and many airports have dedicated teams whose job it is to make sure runways are clear. But I've said before that I'd rather see a dog used for deer recovery than a drone, and this feels like more of the same. Did we lose the ability to train real dogs to chase birds? In my experience, dogs don't need much encouragement to take up that particular profession. Anyway, Alaskans are responding to this as you'd expect a fiercely independent group of people to respond to a robot that looks something out of Skynet. Many of the commenters on the Alaska Department of Transportation Instagram post about Aurora asked how much taxpayer money was spent on the dog. One asked the Department of Transportation to plow roads instead of purchasing robots. Another wondered whether the state would be opening a robot wolf hunting season, and another worried that robots would be the death of humanity. You know who would never be the death of humanity? Actual dogs. Just a fun, playful pack of golden retrievers out there. They'd probably do the job. Gotta feed them. All those things. But it's like a South Park episode. You know, they took our jobs! Ugh. This week, we've got court cases. We've got danger. We've got crime. But first, I'm going to tell you about my week. And my week was awesome. As you know, we had the Brush for Bucks event with the boys from Hushin. We got 22,000 sagebrush seedlings in the ground, planted by 100 volunteers who paid for the next round of seedlings. You are all amazing people. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Big, huge thanks to IDFG, BLM, and Utah DWR for kicking butt on this project as well. Cannot wait to get this going next year. Speaking with Mule Deer Foundation and Idaho Fish and Game, we'd like to see three projects in three states for 2025. Plant habitat, and hopefully some big buck karma in 25. Now, we have so much going on, it's brutal. My buddy Mike Rabe just shot a giant white sea bass in Southern California. There's turkeys gobbling. There's bears out and about. The Meat Eater Live Tour is about to start. If you want to win tickets, you should hit up a BHA pint night, participate in trivia, You'll get on stage with us where you can match your wits. BHA Rendezvous is coming up. On top of this, we should all be hiking, shooting, and generally getting ready for the big show. It's an exciting, anxiety-producing time of year for me. On top of all that, I got a call from Riverstone Kennels out there in Wisconsin trying to get me a puppy, and I had to say no. Or rather, defer to next year's litter, because Snort just needs another season. Both for success, and because I want her to be a good citizen. Back to the high standards I actually have, rather than display, by the time this puppy shows up. And another thing, this is just something I've been tinkering with, because that's what I like to do. Please write in and tell me if I'm going wrong. I'm adding a fuel transfer tank to the old diesel pickup and would like to also be able to patch in a diesel heater for a camper shell. Haven't gotten a camper shell yet, but more than likely going the Go Fast Camper route because they look pretty darn slick and they're made right here in Belgrade. So I'm just soliciting feedback at this point. I'd like to hear from you. I'm also curious if I should drop the hammer on upgrading the shocks in the 2500, because I feel like something has had to have improved since Chevy put those on in 2005. Could be wrong. Let me know. Don't know much about this stuff, but I like turning the wrench, so. Yeah. I think we're on a good path here. So much happening. But we should probably get on to the news, gang. So first stop, the legal desk. The corner crossing case in Wyoming isn't the only courtroom drama you should be keeping an eye on. In Michigan, the Michigan United Conservation Clubs is suing the state's Natural Resources Commission for its recent decision to shave 3 months off the coyote hunting season. We've covered this story before, and we had two representatives from the MUCC on a recent episode, so I'll give you the spark notes. Remember those? Michigan residents had been able to hunt coyotes year-round, but the commission decided to pause the hunt every year from April to July. They didn't have a biological reason for doing so, the coyote population is healthy, and it doesn't appear that shortening the season will have any significant population-level impact. Instead, the commission cited the social perception of hunting coyotes in spring while puppies are on the ground. They worried that public backlash to orphaned coyotes would prompt calls for all coyote hunting to be abolished. The MUCC filed a claim of appeal in Ingham County Circuit Court, arguing that this isn't a good enough reason to make wildlife management decisions. They argue that the commission is charged with making decisions based on, quote, principles of sound scientific management. As it says in a 1996 law giving the commission their authority, if you want a deeper dive into this issue, check out episode 263 of the Week in Review here. Residents in New York, California, and Georgia are suing the National Park Service for not accepting cash at a growing number of locations. According to the media outlet SF Gate, the lawsuit claims this policy violates a federal law that makes U.S. currency legal tender for all public charges. Fun fact, I once saw a lawyer go head-to-head with a flight attendant arguing this very thing. When you guys remember, if you fly at all, there was a time in the not-too-distant past where you could use cash to buy beverages on a plane. Wistful thinking.
Pepperidge Farm remembers.
For their part, the National Park Service says they've closed cash payments at 29 locations so far because they say it costs more to handle the cash than they bring in entry fees. At Death Valley National Park, for example, they say it costs them $40,000 per year to pay employees to handle and count cash, and armored cars to transport the bills. But they only receive $22,000 in cash payments annually, which, for the non-business-minded folks out there, isn't great. If you're wondering why anyone is making such a big deal out of having to use cash, you should know about a larger controversy running under the surface of this story. As we covered in episode 207, the online system people use to reserve campsites and buy day passes is run by a private tech firm called Booz Allen Hamilton. That's B-O-O-Z, Allen Hamilton. And that company has made millions taking a cut of all those park fees, but it's unclear if they get money from cash transactions at the gate. Whatever the case may be, the push to go cashless has gone hand in hand with the push to move people to recreation.gov. Maybe you can care about this, maybe you don't, but if you're a public land user, and I know most of you are, It's a story you should be keeping your eye on. It seems to me like if someone wants to pay their $10 park fee with a few crisp Abrahams, they should be able to do it. If you can handle the truth, I have one more legal drama for you. You may remember all the way back in 2022 when we covered a lawsuit in Maine aimed at eliminating the Sunday hunting ban. The Maine State Supreme Court has issued a ruling in that case, and hunters are divided about whether it's a good thing. Maine is one of the last states in the nation that does not allow hunting on Sundays. In 2021, residents approved an amendment to the state constitution declaring that everyone has a natural right to, quote, harvest the food of their own choosing. Not long after, a couple named Virginia and Joel Parker sued the state based on this new constitutional amendment. They said the Sunday hunting ban violates the state constitution because it doesn't give them enough time to feed their family through hunting. If they have a right to harvest their food, they said they shouldn't be forced to hunt only on Saturdays if they have to work during the week. It was a long-shot argument, but advocates of lifting the ban had hoped it would give them a victory the state legislature has so far denied them. But the Supreme Court wasn't convinced. They argued that while the constitutional amendment does provide a right to hunt wild animals, it specifically excludes the right to violate hunting laws. Because hunting on Sundays would violate the law, the right to food amendment does not give hunters the right to hunt on the Lord's Day. Some hunters are obviously disappointed by this ruling, but not all of them are. Maine is a unique state because even though about 90% of the forests are privately owned, it's customary for landowners to allow public hunting access. Hunters worry that if hunting is allowed on Sundays, some of those landowners will retaliate by posting their property to prohibit access. Surveys have indicated that about 40% of landowners who do not currently post their land would consider posting if Sunday hunting was allowed. We did a really killer ruffed grouse episode, woodcock episode, up in the big Maine woods a few years ago. You should check that out on the Meat Eater YouTube channel. And we get into some of this de facto public access to private ground. Moving on to the Wolf Desk. For the first time in over 100 years, a wild wolf has been spotted in the southern portion of Michigan's Lower Peninsula. Thanks to all you Mitten State residents who sent me this story, the Michigan Department of Natural Resources confirmed last week that a coyote hunter had reported shooting and killing a wolf in January in Calhoun County. Calhoun County is located in what Michiganders call West Michigan, which is actually the southwestern portion of the Lower Peninsula. It's no wonder they have to use the hand map when they want to explain where they live. Anyway, the coyote hunt was legal, and the hunter said he pulled the trigger because he saw what he thought was a very large coyote. But when they finally got this coyote on the scale, it clocked in at 84 pounds. That's over twice as heavy as the biggest coyote you will run into. Genetic tests confirmed that it is a gray wolf. No surprise there. Now, this isn't like as crazy as local media has made it out to be. While this is the first time a wolf has been seen officially in the southern portion of Michigan's Lower Peninsula since the species was extirpated 100 years ago, wolves have been confirmed in northern areas of the LP. In 2004, a wolf was captured and killed by a coyote trapper in Presque Isle County, which is at the northern tip of the Lower Peninsula. In 2011 and 2015, wolf tracks were found in Sheboygan and Emmett counties. In 2014, biologists captured a wolf on a trail camera during an eagle survey. Given this history, it makes sense that one of these wolves might wander away from its pack in the Upper Peninsula and eventually make its way down to southern Michigan. Young male wolves have been known to travel hundreds of miles in search of a mate and new territory, and one wolf from Michigan's UP recently traveled over 4,000 miles up into Manitoba. If it had decided to go south instead of north and west, it would have easily crossed the ice on the Straits of Mackinac and made it down to Calhoun County. Despite these recent sightings, the DNR maintains that there is no stable population on the Lower Peninsula. This isn't a big deal. I never like stories where hunters don't identify properly what they're shooting at. So that just goes against like the tenets of how we grew up in the hunter's education system. We talk about these animals as individuals for the purposes of stories, but when we talk biology, we talk population, right? The wolf population is kicking ass. It's expanding. There's going to be more of this. Lots of wolves hit by cars and in surprising places, I promise you. So for the purposes of Michigan, not a crazy story, but it's everywhere, so we brought it up. Now, if you want to move into some contentious stuff here regarding wolves, we got to travel a little bit further west to our next door neighbor here in Montana, the Cowboy State, Wyoming. There's a lot of wolves in Wyoming. And this particular story, you already know what I'm talking about, has legit wolf hunters and trappers up in arms. It's been covered thoroughly from the get-go. Cowboy State Daily does a great job. That local Wyoming outlet spoke with two anonymous sources who said a man hit a wolf with a snowmobile, tortured it by taping its mouth shut, and then paraded the still alive wolf through a bar in Daniel, Wyoming. He then took the animal out behind the bar and killed it. The Wyoming Game and Fish Department verified that somebody has been cited and fined for being in possession of a live wolf, but didn't release the person's name. That name is out there. It's easy to find. Hunters are upset for the obvious reason that this story will be used by animal rights activists, as you're seeing everywhere, and anti-hunting groups, as you're seeing everywhere, to smear all hunters. The suspect in this case wasn't actually hunting, as far as I'm aware, and it's safe to say that snowmobile is not trapping or hunting. Unfortunately, anti-hunting activists aren't usually bothered by those types of facts. Still, this story is worth covering. Those groups will take advantage of the situation no matter what. This is an opportunity for legitimate ethical hunters to shape the narrative by rejecting this kind of shitty behavior and explaining why wolf management should include hunters and trappers. We aren't doing ourselves any favors by pretending bad actors don't exist. Our job is to counter those bad stories with good stories and highlight the vast, vast majority of hunters who would never consider torturing a wounded animal, no matter what the species is. A lot of people think that getting life insurance means you're insuring yourself for yourself, but it's actually the exact opposite. It's insuring yourself for your family. So if something happens to me and I'm not around anymore, I can have more peace of mind that my family can have some financial support. And that's where Fabric by Gerber Life comes in. More than once in my life, my journey, people have described me as an independent person. And that's how I want to stay, even when I'm dead. That's how I want to be remembered. That's why I have life insurance. Fabric by Gerber Life is term life insurance you can get done right here, right now. You could be covered from your couch in under 10 minutes with no health exam required. If you've got kids, and especially if you're young and healthy, the time to lock in low rates is now. Join the thousands of parents who trust Fabric to protect their family. Apply today in just minutes at meetfabric.com/cal. That's meetfabric.com/cal. M-E-E-T, fabric.com/cal. Policies issued by Western Southern Life Assurance Company, not available in certain states. Prices subject to underwriting and health questions.
O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. If you're confused about what part you need, like what wipers are going to be the best, what replacement headlights are going to be the best, go into O'Reilly and talk to the people that work there, because they're great and they're super friendly, and they'll get you squared away where you walk out knowing you got the right thing. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. Do you need your windshield wipers replaced? You need a brake light fixed? You need some quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/meateater. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/meateater. Pay attention here, because this is a hell of a good service. It's called the Wellness Company. Picture this, okay? You wake up, you got a scratchy throat, you're all congested, you got a runny nose, you got a cough, whatever. And you weigh your options, like you tough it out, get sick, take time off work, try to get a doctor's appointment sometime in the next few months, wait 2 hours at urgent care and sit in a room full of six sick folks, or you open your medical emergency kit. You match your symptoms to the doctor recommended prescription, and you start on the right meds right away. These medical emergency kits, not a first aid kit, all right? It comes with doctor-prescribed meds to treat over 39 medical issues. So, on hand, strong antibiotics for infections of all types. plus a doctor's easy guide so you know exactly what to take and when. No waiting to see the doctor, no waiting at the pharmacy. It's all in there. Every home should have at least one medical emergency kit. Order yours online in minutes. Your kit will be rushed to your door. Get 15% off at twc.health/meateater, but you got to use the promo code meateater. That's promo code meateater, okay, at twc.health/meateater.
Moving on to the fish desk, where it's been a tough week for our scaly friends. A tanker truck in Oregon made national news last week when it crashed on the highway, broke open, and spilled its cargo of 100,000 salmon smolts. The smolts, which were about 2 years old, were being transported from the Looking Glass Hatchery in northeast Oregon to the Imnaha River, where they were set to be released. The salmon population in the Imnaha is listed as threatened, and these fish were meant to bolster that population. Fortunately, it wasn't a complete loss. The tanker crashed right next to Looking Glass Creek, and miraculously, about 77,000 smolts made it down the bank and into the water. The remaining 25,000 Chinook salmon were found dead, either on the ground next to the creek or still in the tanker. According to the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, fishery managers expect to see about 500 to 900 fewer adult fish returning to the Imnaha in 2026 and 2027. However, the 77,000 fish that made it into Looking Glass Creek will likely return there and produce approximately 350 to 700 additional adults. Like those 77,000 smolts, the driver of the truck survived the incident mostly unscathed. I can't say the same for thousands of fish along a 20-mile stretch of the Rooks Creek in Illinois. There, a fertilizer company spilled 20,000 gallons of liquid nitrogen into the river, which resulted in a massive fish kill. The Illinois Emergency Management Agency says the spill was caused by a valve not being closed and a crack in the hose of a 30,000-gallon liquid nitrogen tank. The State Department of Natural Resources is launching an extensive investigation into the ecological disaster, but local residents are reporting that all the fish have gone belly up. The fertilizer company is called BCS, and they released a statement apologizing for the disaster. They said they've never had anything like this happen in their 30-year history, and they're taking action to resolve the situation. They say, quote, "We understand the importance of preserving our ecosystem and ensuring the health of our waterways, and we are committed to identifying and rectifying any factors contributing to environmental degradation as we move forward. I hope they keep their word, but it's a small comfort for the people who live along the 20-mile stretch of river. The state EPA has advised residents to avoid contact with the water until they conclude their investigation. Though, fortunately, recent rains will dilute the toxic chemical, so it won't cause too much more damage." You know the old saying, the solution to pollution is dilution. Thanks to listener Jonathan Schlesinger for sending us that story. Moving on to the crime desk. A Mississippi wildlife commissioner was cited last week for hunting turkeys over bait. Commissioner Leonard Bentz Jr. serves as a member of the Mississippi Department of Wildlife, Fisheries, and Parks Commission. He admitted to local media that game wardens working at the department he oversees slapped him with the citation after he hunted a 500-acre property that had been baited with crickets. Bentz claims that the landowner and caretaker of the property in Holmes County had released crickets onto the landscape days before he and his crew arrived. Bentz says he was not aware of the landowner's actions, and he claims officers admitted during the investigation that they knew he was not aware that crickets were on the property, but they cited him anyway, and now his confirmation to the Wildlife Commission is in jeopardy. Anonymous sources told SuperTalk Mississippi News that if he does not resign, there is an effort underway to oust him. I don't know what the truth is here, but good on those game wardens for not looking the other way to protect a commissioner. It would have been easy to leave his name out of it, but they did what the law requires them to do. If you live in Mississippi, you have a chance to influence how this story ends. Bentz has to be confirmed by the state Senate, and they'll be looking for feedback from their constituents. I don't know enough about the dude. Could be a great guy in a bad spot, but that's up to you to weigh in. Staying in the Deep South, an Alabama man was shot last week following an argument over an illegally killed Canada goose. Colby Lee Pinniger told the Tuscaloosa County Sheriff's Office that he heard a gunshot outside his home in a rural area of central Mississippi. When he went out to investigate, he saw a man running to a truck with a rifle, along with a dead Canada goose in the field across from his home. When he confronted the poacher, a 42-year-old fella named Jacob Wayne Battle, A verbal altercation ensued. Battle was there with his son, who was driving the truck, and when Pinniger tried to see the license plate on the truck, Battle leaned out the passenger window and shot Pinniger. When deputies caught up to Battle, he admitted that he didn't see Pinniger with the gun, but still fired 2 to 3 warning shots. Pinniger was hit in the leg, but is expected to be okay, and Battle was charged with first-degree assault. Whether he recovered the goose or not, it's safe to say his is cooked.
Bunker, how much do you want for the goose?
They're not for sale.
Name your price.
She can't have one.
Who says I can't?
The Utah Division of Wildlife Resources is seeking the public's help after a bald eagle was shot near Cedar City earlier this year. The injured bald eagle was discovered near 4500 West in Cedar City on February 29. Responding conservation officers discovered that the eagle had been shot through the wing with what appeared to be a rifle. Unfortunately, the injuries were severe and it was determined that the eagle would not recover, resulting in it needing to be euthanized. Anyone with information is asked to call the UTIP hotline at 800-662-3337. Last one for you. Controversy has erupted in Nova Scotia after conservation officers arrested 2 elver poachers and then left them to walk home without shoes at night in late March. As we've covered previously, elvers are baby eels, and fishing for them has exploded in recent years as the demand for them has risen in Asia. Illegal elver fishing got so bad in Nova Scotia that the province decided to cancel the entire season for everyone. But some members of native tribes believe that they still have treaty rights to fish, even if the province has closed this season. The 2 fishermen involved in this case are both members of the Mi'kmaq people, and they were elver fishing on the night of March 26. They ran away when conservation officers pulled up, but they were eventually apprehended and put in the back of a squad car. They were released at a gas station, but their hip waders and phones were seized. Unfortunately, they didn't have any other footwear, and they weren't able to get in touch with anyone to pick them up, so they wrapped their feet in duct tape and plastic bags and walked down the road around 1 a.m. until someone finally stopped and picked them up. Protests have been organized against Canada's Department of Fisheries and Oceans, and Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has called for an investigation into, quote, the way enforcement officers need to behave. The Department of Fisheries and Oceans has declined to comment beyond saying that it's standard practice to confiscate fishing gear during this kind of investigation. Thanks to listener Jeffrey Chang for sending us that story. That's all I got for you this week. Thank you so much for listening. And remember to write in to ASKCAL, that's AskCal at themeateater.com, and let me know what's going on in your neck of the woods. Thanks again, and I'll talk to you next week. Oh, what do you think of that, Phil?
I'm sure a lot of you guys remember the old ceremonial hunting tradition of eating the heart out of the first animal you kill. Meat from those organs are among the most nutrient-rich foods on the planet. You can get those same benefits your ancestors craved via convenient daily capsules from Heart and Soil. Find out more at heartandsoil.co. And remember, use code MEATEATER for 10% off your purchase.
Outdoor adventure won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup. Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer. Simply pour a can in your gas tank. Hunters and anglers rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should the entire season. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit seafoamworks.com to learn more. That's seafoamworks.com to learn more.